And welcome, everybody, as we launch into another exciting edition of Overtime, Off the Hook Overtime, that is. Did we all make it through? Kyle, you there?
I'm trying to be here, yes.
Okay, good, good. And Rob and Gila and Alex and Voltaire, you all here?
Yep.
Okay.
We are here.
But, we are here.
I don't know that we're online.
I don't see anything. Okay, you know, last week we made the mistake of not being able to be heard, not knowing it. I don't see any viewers, and I don't know why that would be, unless we did something wrong.
Your stream is not your live stream is not on your channel where it would normally be.
Really?
It's just not coming up.
We did everything the same way, Kyle. Did we do anything differently? We scheduled the stream, so I don't know what possibly could have gone wrong here. It says we're broadcasting.
I can't see it from my microphone. So.
Okay, I'll get up and you can take over my station.
Well, I don't know that I could be of better help, but sure, yeah. Since you've offered, I'll make my way over there, and then how about I'll let you know once I look at it.
Okay. Well, whilst you guys are shuffling around for the sake of anyone that can hear us, I will say that maybe it's a non-published link and the stream has not been
maybe it's
made
not published.
Public in some manner. It's a non-published
number.
What
are you nodding your head for, Kyle?
Yeah, it's unlisted. Hold on.
How did that happen? You know why?
We were troubleshooting something else.
Oh, my God. I know what happened.
Public? We want to go
public.
Public.
Are we thinking about being public? Let's make it public. Why not? But when I get back to my station, I'll explain exactly what happened because I know it now. Sorry, folks. We're going to move around the room again.
Okay, well, we are now public. So, for those of you who didn't hear the intro, this is Off the Hook Overtime, and we are all here and ready to communicate with you live. And
we
are now streaming.
Any,
I can hear us.
You still have any
air.
Viewers? Wait a minute. If you can hear us, how come you don't show up as a viewer?
Yeah,
well,
I am.
I
now
see one,
seeing,
so maybe that's you.
I am now seeing. Well, one of them is me. I am now seeing two watching now. So there's.
Okay, we're getting calls.
We got calls last
week, even though we weren't on the air. But let me explain what happened. What happened was
Should I drop that?
No, don't drop it. Okay. The person went to the trouble of calling us. They can just hold on for a second. We put up something on our YouTube channel over the week. It was an additional video that was attached to a talk for Hope, but it was unlisted. The link was published in the talk, so that people who saw the talk would see the link, click on the link, and see the remaining material. So I guess it saved that as the last setting that we used, unlisted, and applied it to this. But, you know, we distinctly said use the same settings from the one that we just copied, and it didn't do that. Thanks, Google.
That was the one we fixed, right?
Yeah. No. I'm talking about something else that happened between that.
Oh, well, I think the one we fixed was also unlisted for a period.
Well, that was, but it's listed now. Okay, anyway,
important thing
enough
is,
about our trouble.
It works.
It works? All right. We're, this is the show where we get worse at technology as we use it more. All right, so, I wanted to talk more about what you guys were mentioning with technology and all that. And I don't know, Alex, you had kind of, Rob too, I think maybe Alex, you're a bit more pessimistic about the permanent effect this is going to have on us, where this becomes the norm. We just use all these online services and don't actually meet in person. We're afraid to hug each other. I don't know. When this ends, and it will end, I think people will be so happy to get back to the way things used to be. They might actually overdo it, you know, and just want to do everything in person from now on. I don't necessarily buy into us, you know, accepting this as the norm. It's good. It does the job. We're doing radio because of that technology and so many other things as well. But it's no substitute for doing things in real life. I can't wait to get back into the streets of New York and cause some real mayhem and just travel and see other places and other people in person. Do you really think people are going to say, yeah, this is our life now? We're not going to go back?
I mean, look, the point I was making there is that there's no toggle switch to going back to normalcy here. It's going to be a very slow roll to get back to where we were being unafraid of physicality, being unafraid of touching each other, touching the elevator button, you know, leaving the bathroom without washing your hands or sanitizing.
Hold on a second. Is this really the battle you want to fight, is leaving the bathroom without washing your hands? That's what it's about for you.
No, that's not the hill that I want to die on here. But, you know, the point I'm making is that there's not going to be something where, like, today is Monday, or, you know, rather, you know, let's use an accurate description. Today is Wednesday. Tomorrow's Thursday. We're all back to normal. We're back in the streets. We're hugging each other, et cetera. This is going to go on for a very long time. And with the anti-vaxxers out there and the fact that herd immunity is not going to occur for at least 6, 7, 8 months, and we still don't even know whether or not the vaccine actually would prevent people from spreading the virus, or if whether it just prevents the symptoms of the virus within the vaccinated person. And so anybody who hasn't been vaccinated is going to be susceptible to this type of thing. And, you know, we're going to have to be very, very careful for a long period of time. And it'll probably be 2 years, is my guess, you know, of being extraordinarily cautious about germs, about the virus, about services, about sanitization, about our hands, about touching. And that's going to have a major effect on our psyches. I mean, if you think back a year or so ago, nobody had any qualms about touching a subway pole, pushing buttons in an elevator, et cetera. But now all of this is incredibly dangerous.
Now it is, yes. Now it is. But you're saying, okay, it's going to take longer than we want it to take. It'll take, you know, a couple of years maybe instead of a few more months. But my point is, whenever that period happens, when that ends, when we get to that stage, I don't know if we're going to continue to be super cautious about everything. You think we're going to be ultra paranoid about germs? We'll all become germophobes?
I don't think we're all going to become germophobes, but I think this has changed us. The people who have lived through this will have been changed, I think, irrevocably in some material respects in their psyche. And how they approach cleanliness, how they approach germs, how they approach touching. You know, we may be happy to touch and embrace each other again, but, you know, at the slightest drop of a hat or the slightest provocation of the news media that something like a Corona 22 might be coming down the
Voltaire pipe. Sneezed right when you said that. the slightest thing will set us off. And yeah, sneezing is going to do it. People are going to run for the hills.
Very well placed.
Well timed there.
I think we're going to be about this. And I think it also has changed the nature of how we maintain our personal relationships and the way we do business, too. We're not going to have that continuous, you know, business travel that we had in the past to, you know, fly from one continent to another just to have a couple of meetings. You know, we've become so accustomed to doing things through Zoom. Through
okay, is that a bad thing, though? Is that not flying to Los Angeles to have a meeting and flying all the way back? I mean, I could lose that. But, you know, exploring the world, going to different countries, seeing people in person, I don't think we're going to give that up. I don't think people aren't going to be going to New York City or even going into the office as opposed to staying at home all. I mean, Alex, come on, you're a good example of this. I'm sure you would love to get out of the house occasionally and just go to the office and you know, be away from the kids for a while. You love them, but come on, you have to have different environments. I don't think everyone's just going to stay put when the crisis ends.
Oh, I agree with that. And I think, you know, there'll be a major period of revelry when we think that we're through or through the thick of it or out of the woods, whatever your metaphor is that you prefer. You know, for the end of this particular pandemic or what appears to be the end of it. And I think that will be a great period. Maybe it'll be some kind of renaissance period. And to a certain extent as well, I think you look at a city like New York in particular, you mentioned getting away from it. So many people have left the city. So many of these people have gone out and moved permanently out to the suburbs. And I feel like here's a new opportunity for the city of New York to get back a lot of that edge that it had lost.
Exactly.
That had become by gentrification.
Uh-huh.
You sometimes need to be on the precipice of danger and craziness in a city in order for it to have that edge that creates some kind of tension that leads to creativity and really fascinating things. I mean, you think about what came out of New York in the 1980s when it was crime ridden and, you know, frankly, a bit of a, you know, insane city. But, you know, you think back from 2010 onwards, I couldn't help but feeling like, you know, New York and it's all of its neighborhoods. And we've talked about this many, many times, that they've become so homogenized to certain extents, right? But, you know, by the franchises, by the juxtaposition of a Hale and Hardy next to a CVS, next to a Duane Reade, next to a Bank of America, next to a Chase Bank, next to another Hale and Hardy, next to a Subway, next to a, you know, a Pinkberry, right? That's what every goddamn neighborhood in the city has become. But those franchises have not made it through. Those franchises have decided that it was better for them to shutter their doors and not support their neighbors and be there for their neighborhoods than it was to stick through this pandemic. And what we're left with are pop shops that we wanted there in the first place that were being threatened by these franchises and these chains. And now they have an opportunity to resurge and to renew and perhaps give rise to another renaissance of New York. That's what I really hope.
That is truly optimistic, and that is something that I really hope we see as well. The thing is, the infrastructure, the city has to support these mom and pop operations, not bury them with paperwork and regulations and make it hard for them to get through this. They should be opening up doors, not closing them. I've heard of cases where landlords are trying to charge tenants more to have outdoor dining because they're using more space. Ridiculous things like that. Remember, the franchises, the ones that you're talking about, they stopped paying rent. They just stopped. And that's a lot of rent they didn't pay. But they're still in business in other places or in suburbs or things like that. This is a tremendous opportunity, not only for the mom-and-pop operations, but also for residents of the city. If the opportunity is open to them for affordable housing, well, we can start crossing those gaps, you know, where nobody can afford to live in Manhattan anymore. Maybe that can finally change. Voltaire, I see your hand is up.
I don't think that the situation is going to get better for mom and pop shops. I don't think that the problem, I think, is a fundamental issue of the larger economy and the. I don't think they were priced out by the chain shops coming in. I think that the chain shops coming in were the only people that could afford the real estate prices getting so high. And the results of real estate prices getting high is there's also a more structural thing in the economy of low interest rates and companies like BlackRock investment firms buying up real estate and treating it as an investment, whereas even in the – in the 80s, that wasn't so much the case.
But,
so
you know, I think it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing, because when you say that only the chains can afford the rent, well, they raise the rent because they know the chains. Like on the corner of 8th and Avenue A, where the pizza place used to be, and now it's a Starbucks. They jacked the rent up when they found out Starbucks was looking for a place there, kicked the guy out, and Starbucks moved in. Nobody else would pay that kind of rent except Starbucks. So, yeah, the rent went up, but it went up because they know the chains will come in. When they realize the chains aren't going to come in anymore, and I think, you know, after seeing this, the chains will be a lot less eager to come into the city. Maybe the rents will get more reasonable and affordable again. That's my hope.
Probably a lot of these firms there, the value of their properties is based off the last rent that they paid. So and because they're so like monopolized, all these real estates owned by such few companies, they would rather have the stores sit empty than so that they don't have to like reappraise them.
Yeah.
Than have rented out at a lower rate.
That should be illegal. That should be illegal for them to.
It needs to be fixed by regulation and get back to like housing and stuff. In order to have cheaper housing, we need better mass public housing properties.
Yeah, you need to do things like that.
Rent caps, like in Berlin.
All throughout the East Village, you see vacant shops, and you know people keep sending us pictures because the realtor that owns those places, their number ends in 2600. For some reason, people think that's of interest to us. But they just have all these vacant places that they could easily rent out, or don't just hey. Give a company or a small business 6 months no rent. How is that worse than having it vacant? It's not. You might have
they
might find out from other people that hey, this company rented for me for free. If that's part of the deal where they don't tell anybody, maybe it'll generate more people coming in. I don't know. I'm naive at this, but. I just don't think having vacant shops is the answer ever.
These companies have all taken out loans. They're so over-leveraged that they've taken out loans to buy more and more property. Mm-hmm. And then the loans are based on them having property which was the last sold renting price was a certain amount. And if they rent out at another lower rent, then their loan payments will go up dramatically. Whereas if they don't rent out anything, if they leave it empty, the loan prices won't go up. It's a very messed
this
up system.
This sounds like something Trump would do and has done. All right, we have some phone calls coming in. Did you have something, Kyle?
I was just going to add that cool landlords are underrated. I mean, there's so many cool landlords. A lot of good things happen, especially when tenants have a working relationship or they have cooperation. I know WBAI would not be in the position it is without a good landlord.
That's true. That's true.
And that'll work through difficult times, crazy politics. That's important
or
stuff.
Veselka, the 24-hour Ukrainian place on 9th Street and 2nd Avenue. They're thriving. Not just surviving, they're thriving. They own their building. Oh, no, they don't own their building. They have a good landlord.
They
have a good landlord. That's even better.
No, that's a great example. I was probably subconsciously thinking of that story.
They're expanding, and this is it makes all the difference when you have a landlord who works with you as opposed to looking for an advantage. Okay, so let our listeners call in, 802-321-4225. We already have a call. I'm going to bring this up. A warning, I might make a horrible noise when I bring this up. Let's see what happens. Nothing
it might
so
be
far.
Google, too.
Good evening. Yeah, it might be Google demanding we hit one. Okay, let's see if that... All right, I think we have somebody.
Yes, hi. I'd like to mention something about homogenized...
Is this Rebel?
Yes.
Oh, my God, Rebel, how have you been? It's been like 10 years since I've heard your voice.
Yeah, I haven't been listening. And I listened to a couple of old shows, and I call in, I get them because I've been listening online.
Yeah, you're on all the old shows. All the old shows, but they haven't been on a new show. So, and this is an overtime, so it's even better.
Right. And, you know, I was talking about homogenization of companies. If you remember, like, Ramada Hotels and Days Inn Hotels and, Comfort Hotel, whatever. They're all Super 8 hotels. They're all one company now. Remember in the 80s and the 90s, it's all a Wyndham hotel.
Yeah, that's just one example. Maybe I'm sure you remember when you used to call us incessantly, by the way, in our early days, you would always be telling us about particular phones in a particular bank. Do you remember what the bank was?
Right. It was Chemical Bank.
Chemical Bank.
Also, right.
And what is Chemical? What did Chemical Bank turn into?
Chase. But what did don't you remember Manufacturers Hanover?
Manny Hanny.
Bank of America. Mm-hmm. No, not Bank of America. It was, what was the other bank? Bank of New York. It was Bank of New York.
That's right.
The Chemical Bank, the Manufacturers Hanover.
Dime?
I think there was not Dime. Dime didn't get collected by Chase.
Well, Dime turned into something because they're not around anymore.
Dime
anyway, yeah, so we're reminiscing fondly about banks that have changed.
And also about the virus thing, about, people not, using Zoom and these conferences. Zoom doesn't even work good. I've used it, and it doesn't. WhatsApp on your phone works better than Zoom on your phone, and it takes a lot of batteries out of your phone.
Wow.
I mean, do you remember the person that Nashville thing that happened?
You know, someone tried to blow up AT&T. We haven't had time to mention that yet. We're gonna talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, but not that I encouraged a terrorist act.
That's good to hear, Rebel. That's nice to know.
But you know, he was afraid of 5G and of what's going on. Probably what's been going on with the pandemic and everybody's, online.
Well, why does everybody assume it's about 5G? Why does everybody assume this guy blows himself and part of the AT&T building up because of 5G?
It's not even 5G. I think 6G is scarier.
Okay, 6G, yeah. You know, he never said anything about 5G. We're just assuming this. And it's just, we're just making this.
But I mean, that's what the news says.
The news depends on that kind of crap.
You think he was, disturbed by a lot of the advancements and it just was too much, or he knew too much sort of thing?
No, he was an IT guy. I mean, this is from what I heard, and that he doesn't want 5G because it's going to create autonomous cars and take people's jobs. And, you know, I could see the point, but to do something like that, I don't think...
Are there reports of that, though?
It doesn't really bolster his argument.
Yeah, not really. I mean, it's...
Blowing up cars is a lot worse than autonomous cars, I think.
It's a heck of a way to start the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by the way, what are they going to do with all these new buildings they're building up in Manhattan? I mean, there's these big buildings by Grand Central Station. It's probably going to be halfway occupied.
Well, you know, new businesses or residences, they can do that. Alex, are you trying to say something, or are you just scratching yourself?
No, I wanted to ask Rebel a question. It's been many years. I mean, I think, Rebel, you and I met a long time ago.
Yeah,
literally.
Yeah. You used to work at Walbaum's in Long Island, and you used to be at the...
Wait. You know where Alex used to work on Long Island? You don't live on Long Island. How do you know that?
I don't live on Long Island, but Alex invited me to his house like back in the 90s.
You invited Rebel to your house, Alex?
Everybody makes mistakes.
Wow. Okay, no, I didn't know you guys were so close.
Well,
I remember, house.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've been there many times. So I don't remember if you ever came out. You must have come out at some point, I guess, Rebel.
What's the question you have for him, Alex?
I came out to Long Island to meet. Who was the other kid's name that you were hanging out
with? Oh, hold on a second. He's trying to social engineer us. So be very careful how you answer that, because this might be information that he is not privy to.
There were quite a few.
Speaking of social engineering,
he's moving on to the next topic. Where he's leaving you behind.
Okay.
Go ahead.
But Rebel, I have a question for you, because back in the 90s, when
I think Rebel has the floor. Go ahead, Rebel.
Back in the 70s, I remember back in the old days, I used to get prank calls, and I called this one person. I don't know, remember why. I look up in the phone book and see these phone numbers and call these people. This person, this is the analog days in the 70s.
Analog prank calls, yes.
She'd keep me on the phone asking me questions, are you alone? And I hung up. I had two lines in my house, two phone numbers, one that my parents had used and one that we would use. I called on the desk phone, we'd call it the desk phone, one line. And then I'd hang up with this person. Inside of an hour, I got a call on the kitchen phone, which was the other line, from this lady. Mind you, I was young at the time, and she said, yes, this is the police station. We're getting calls. No, or something like that. Or this is the telephone company. We're getting calls from... There was a prank call made to some Mrs. whatever, and I'd be on the phone, and I wouldn't know it was her, and I'd be all scared, and she's... like, are you ever going to call this person again? And then I hung up.
You might. Okay, well, interesting. That's before caller ID, so that's not how she got your number. You just called a regular phone number, and they were able to...
A regular phone number, and they knew my name, too.
Well, you know, it's possible. First of all, if anybody gets a call from Rebel, they know it's Rebel. Maybe your reputation really preceded you, and people recognized your voice way back then as well.
No, this is the 70s. This is not the 90s.
Yeah, you've been at this a while, Rebel.
He was just a kid. He said he was a kid.
Yeah, but he was probably a precocious kid, and probably everybody in the neighborhood knew him. You know, or all she had to do was make a couple of calls herself and ask, and somebody would rat him out. I don't know. But it's, or you called the operator. Did you prank the operator? Because they could do that.
What's Alex's question?
No, I didn't call the operator. But there was, I heard that if you keep the party on the line for like at least 2 minutes or 3 minutes, you're able to trace the call.
Well, yeah, I've watched a few TV shows where they're running through central offices and saying it's 80% traced and 85% traced, and then they hang out at just the last moment. And yeah, so I don't know if that's what happened to you, but I'm glad you got away with it. You know, I'm glad you. It could have ruined your life back then in the 1970s making that prank call.
Yeah, but I mean, thank God my parents weren't home. But how did they know the other phone number? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, it sounds to me, and it's just a theory, somebody had a friend in the phone company, and it wasn't you. That's what I think. Alex, go ahead. You had a question.
I did.
Do you remember what it was?
This has been a question I've had for several decades. Every once in a while, it pops into my mind. Is if our listeners go back to the 90s and listen to Off the Hook, whenever we took listener phone calls, the first voice anybody would hear on any show was always Rebel, and he would say, you know, Emmanuel, right? And we said, oh, hi Rebel, are you again? Rebel, how were you always the first caller? You must have been calling on multiple lines into the old 212-279-3400 number for WBAI. But you would have had to then, I guess, know which line was picked up. Did you have some kind of switchboard? How did you do that?
He was always first.
I mean, remember, I had two phones in my house, so I call on both phones. I had two. I mean, I never had more than two phones.
Really? Because you seem to be on every line, and we could never avoid you. Not that we were trying to avoid you, but, you know, we played a little game where we said, let's try and make it not Rebel be the first call. And we always lost.
You must have had more than two phone lines. There's no way you could have done that with two phone lines.
No, I did. It was always two phone lines, actually.
Hmm.
Because I remember, they used to cut you off when you got the new 5ESS. They cut you off, and then, you know, you just redial quickly. And...
But it's like you would switch from one to the other, right? While you're waiting on one, you're dialing on the other. So as soon as you get hung up on one, something like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
And he dialed very fast, I would bet. You had a touch-tone phone, I hope. It wasn't rotary.
Yeah, of course.
It was touch-tone, sure. But the WBAI switchboard back then had like eight or nine lines, I remember, right?
Ten lines.
Calling in.
Ten lines.
Ten lines, okay,
yes.
Sure.
And New York City, come on.
So either you were really unlucky, or I think Rebel is not being entirely forthcoming with the number of phone lines that he was utilizing back in the 90s.
I had extremely poor luck many times back then, so it's entirely possible that's what it was. Rebel, any other comments? We want to open it up to some other callers, but it's great hearing your voice again. Are you still in the area?
I'm still in New York City in Queens. You don't have chat for this, do you? This is the first time I'm listening online on the YouTube thing, and
I think it's disabled.
Have like a chat thing.
I think it's disabled in the stream. I'm not quite sure though.
Well, we have the IRC channel, don't we?
We always have the IRC channel.
Yeah, that's a chat. I mean, how many chats do you want?
Well, I look at the IRC.
Sorry, Rebel, we're having trouble hearing you.
IRC does not work.
IRC doesn't work. What's the meaning of this?
Wait,
how can IRC not work?
IRC.com, right?
No, it's irc.2600.net. irc.com.
You might get more chat than you bargained for, though.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
Be careful with that.
Rebel, again, good hearing you, and stay in touch, and hopefully we'll see you at a meeting when those start up again.
When those start up again.
Yes, yeah. They will start up again. We promise.
Oh, by the way, speaking of starting meetings, what if the Zoom thing? The meetings are all on Zoom. I could go on my laptop and.
Rob, do you know something about that?
Yeah, for a lot of local meetings, including our own, have been having virtual meetings while we can't have in-person 2600 meetings. So if you go to here in New York, if you go to nyc2600.net, all the info is there on how to get on our Zoom, which is going to be happening this Friday, New Year's Day. And you're free to join in via cam. You don't have to have your camera on. You can join in via regular telephone. All the instructions are there. And it's also something I noticed. I got the most recent issue of 2600. I got my subscriber copy, and the meetings page, which would normally list the meetings all over the world, instead this issue is a nice, thoughtful piece on like the current state of the 2600 meetings as an in-person concern. And I very much dig what you said there, and also. The fact that it's hopeful, you know, we cannot do this in person now, but we can improve and adapt and take stock of what we're doing for when we can do it in person again.
Right. We're going to hit the reset button. We're going to hit the reset button and just every meeting we'll start again. And we'll have a lot more meetings as well. And Rob, that address you gave out, I didn't hear the first dot. It's irc.2600.net, correct?
The address for the website is nyc2600.net, and on there there's a post with the information on getting onto the Zoom. So it's go to nyc2600.net on the web, or you could go to nyc2600 on Twitter, or we're on Mastodon as well on mastodon.social, and the info is all linked to you from there.
You know what I bet? I bet we could make nyc.2600.net go to nyc2600.net. That's what I'm going to work on for 2021. I'm going to figure out how to do that. Rebel, want to say goodnight to you?
Well,
thank you for calling.
By, yeah, hopefully by the time we are ready to do in-person meetings, the city group thing will be finished.
Well, you know, I think we like the new location better than Citigroup. It's just a half a block away, and it's they're nicer to us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know they've been rebuilding that lobby.
What's that place called again, Rob? Do you remember?
The Atrium.
The Atrium.
The Atrium on
53rd
the Atrium
at 875.
Yeah.
There you go. Right there on 2nd Avenue? 1st Avenue? What avenue is
Third.
That? 3rd Avenue. Third. I knew it was one of those.
3rd Avenue and 53rd Street.
All right. Talk to you later, Rebel. Good night.
Okay. Bye, Emmanuel.
Wow. Good hearing from Rebel. I can't believe I heard from Rebel. Isn't that amazing?
This is brilliant.
All right, I shouldn't hit that button when there's nobody there. All right, good to know. So, yeah, somebody tried to blow up AT&T in Nashville. That was something. I know exactly what that was. When we went to see the eclipse a few years ago, Kyle and I hung out right by there. It's not the Batman building, which is a skyscraper, which I think used to be Bell South, but affiliated with AT&T.
Yeah, and that building, its proximity, I mean, it's probably got some kind of server or rack area for the business end that goes on in the taller building, but the actual plant, the central office, was adjacent or right on that street where this person parked. Yeah. And so he parked pretty much like, it looks like, right over some vaults, and apparently some generators were knocked out, so they ran out of battery power. It was whole mess.
Here's my theory as to what this was all about, because everybody is speculating that he had a problem with Hooters, which was across the street, you know, all sorts of things like that. The recording that everyone is playing doesn't say what they say the recording was saying. They say it was a countdown, and the only recording I've heard so far says, it sounds like a police voice. I was surprised to find out it wasn't. Basically saying, if you can hear this, evacuate now. Very professional sounding recording. I didn't hear the recording that says 15 minutes, this thing is going to explode, 14 minutes. And apparently the song Downtown by Petula Clark was playing. So my theory, since Downtown by Petula Clark is the very first song I remember hearing as a child, and I'm just a couple of years younger than this guy was, I have a feeling it might, even though the lyrics are very apropos for being downtown, I suppose, it might have been a sentimental favorite of his. Might be his first pleasant memory as a child, and it might be just something that he was thinking of as he made this decision to end his life, and that's why he played that song. Maybe he was isolated, lonely, upset at something. Maybe 5G, maybe not. I don't think it's really anything more complicated than that. You know, as somebody who just felt no other way out and went to the heart of Nashville. Anyone who comes from Nashville or has been to Nashville knows AT&T is right there and knows that is the busy street right there. That's why he chose that area. So that's my theory. The story that I see in USA Today, the headline, Nashville bombing froze wireless communications, exposed Achilles heel in regional network. It's as if nobody knew that blowing up a truck outside a telecommunications facility might screw up the telecommunications facility. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. There's really not much you can do about that unless you want to encase it in more steel and concrete. That kind of thing, yeah, it's that's the effect it'll have. The way to not have that be a big deal is to have lots of redundancy and lots of different points of presence and things like that. So I was impressed how quickly they were able to find the truck. I was looking at Google images from years earlier, seeing where he moved it, this kind of thing, you know, with detective work and with technology, you pretty much always are able to figure out what happened in the end. Yes, Alex.
One of the things I think is really fascinating about this is the massive amount of media attention that the recording has attracted since last week. As you mentioned, there were multiple accounts, certain recordings that showed really that, you know, the intention behind this was not to destroy people, but to damage property, right? It wasn't to take lives, in a sense. But because everybody has become so familiar with the countdown recording here, what is interesting to me is that now anybody with a speaker, anybody can make a recording that broadcasts out in some kind of loud volume There is going to be an explosion and a countdown.
This is everyone's a new discovery? People are just figuring this out now that they can broadcast something on a megaphone?
Well, look, because this had such an effect, everyone else is going to be on high alert for these types of activities, copycat type of situations, and you can cause a massive amount of business interruption with a recording now because this has gotten so much play. In the past, people might not have taken this so seriously, but you could easily shut down whole city blocks by placing a couple of loudspeakers, broadcasting a recording, you know, stating that there is going to be an explosion.
Yeah, but Alex, that's exactly what happened this time. They did shut down a couple of city blocks because of that recording, and the recording hadn't happened before. So I think any time you announce that something's about to blow up, whether it's now or 10 years ago, people are going to take it seriously.
Look, I agree with that, but now people it's more susceptible, and now people are people are aware of this particular recording, and it's got such massive attention, worldwide attention. I think that there are going to be copycats that are just going to be playing some kind of recording or some kind of ominous countdown, and it can cause a really massive. It's a very low cost, simple way to cause a massive amount of business interruption in any area.
So are bomb threats. Those have been around forever.
I think only in a situation where you need some misdirection. I feel like the high cost of not actually blowing yourself up is that you're going to be hunted down a bit. I mean, there's going to be some investigations and people are going to have a problem with what you caused, that chaos. But if you need that misdirection to further some other aim, that cost may not be substantial enough to think twice about it.
I'm more concerned that a few years ago, his girlfriend called the police saying that this guy is building bombs and they totally dismissed it. They just said, well, we don't have any cause to search his place or to search the camper that's parked in his backyard behind a fence. Well, how about the person saying he's building a bomb? And isn't that some kind of just cause? Or it's a fine line that you have to walk for personal privacy and things like that. But if they had this kind of tip off and they just ignored it, you have to wonder just how good was the policing. Alex, and then we're going to take a phone call.
Sure. I mean, that would certainly rise to the level of probable cause in my book. Maybe there were issues with the credibility of the woman reporting it, or the circumstances under which it was reported might have been somewhat suspect. But sure, certainly. I mean, in search warrants and even just, you know, a police officer going and knocking on somebody's door without a search warrant and sort of peeking in and around, that's something that could certainly happen as well. And then that could lead to further evidence that could allow you to go to a judge and get a warrant on the basis of probable cause to go and search this person's apartment. I mean, you know, it certainly is concerning that law enforcement didn't pick up on that tip. But before we, I think, rush to judgment, we should know all of the facts surrounding that particular tip off as well. It doesn't sound right to me that law enforcement did absolutely nothing with a tip-off about a bomb.
Yeah. Okay, our phone number, 802-321-4225. This is going to be on for a few more minutes because we've been talking for quite a while. And we have to do other things with our lives, too. But we had a nice conversation with Rebel. Do we have someone on the line now, Kyle? Oh, I didn't know we had somebody.
Yeah, I already answered it.
Oh, okay. Well, you're
they've been waiting.
I'm so sorry. Caller, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good evening, folks.
Hi, how you doing?
This is Bobson from Bulgaria.
Bobson, I wasn't sure it was you for a second. You didn't sound quite as Bulgarian, but okay, now I recognize your voice.
How you doing?
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to.
Hey, happy New Year's Eve. It's already New Year's Eve where you are.
No, it's the early hours of the 31st of December.
That's New Year's Eve, at least where we come from.
Oh, well, yeah. the Eve is a bit later, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Whatever.
Did you make it to Congress, the virtual Congress?
RC3, you mean?
Yes, RC3.
It was so much fun.
Wasn't it fun?
It was.
Well, I didn't have anything to use, all the bells and whistles with the 2D world and all that fancy stuff they did, but I watched a lot of lectures, and I have about three times as many to catch up on in the next few days.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're going to release them online, media.ccc.de.
Yeah, they've started doing that, but they they have some catching up to do with this. So it was fun to... I heard our friend Mitch Ottman was saying how he did a soldering workshop with 160 people.
How in God's name did Mitch Ottman do a soldering workshop virtually? How did he do that?
Well,
if anyone can do it, he can.
I have to Mitchell's talk surprising. To him about it because I don't have the details on that, but he had 160 people in the workshop, which doesn't surprise me knowing him that he would do such a thing. He probably had fun doing it, which is why what Congress is all about, right?
Yes, definitely true. I'm just glad that hackers are figuring out ways to do things anyway, and I think we'll be all the stronger for it.
Yeah, we don't know unless we try it.
True that. It was lots of fun. I'm looking forward to their releasing the recordings because there's a lot to catch up on.
Now, is it true that there was a limit on the number of virtual tickets that they had?
Oh, yeah, the €0 tickets. I think so. Well, I think it has to do with the new 2D world thingy that they did, which was some sort of modern, I don't know what thing of bells and whistles that I had nowhere to run on. So, I mean, I don't have a modern enough operating system with modern enough web browser to take full advantage of the bells and whistles on it. So I haven't gone to it, but
hey, Bobson.
I didn't get to check that out either. It seems like it was a test, but they didn't want to overburden it because then it would really be buggy, and they were working that out. People were submitting suggestions.
We just discovered something really interesting, and Bobson, you're part of the reason for it. We just found out we have a TV set that has it's tied into the telephone. We see caller ID; it shows up on the upper left hand side. You're on the phone. We don't have call waiting on this phone line. And if you call the phone line now, well, if you call the phone line direct, that is, the number we give out forwards to this phone number. If you call it direct, you get a busy signal if you call the number, but the caller ID shows up of the person who got the busy signal. Have you ever heard of anything like that? This is unbelievable.
No.
I just tried it for my cell phone, and my number showed up even though I got a busy signal.
There's no name. It just shows zero, I think, for the name, or an O.
Well, that's just because of the way this happens to be programmed, but that's not the first weird thing I've found out about this caller ID. If you block your number and your number is listed as preferred ring for whatever reason, you'll still get the preferred ring even though you blocked your number. So caller ID is still being passed along even when you block it. Wow. Okay, we have a lot to experiment with. We just discovered that now because we saw a caller ID come over and you were on the phone, so that wasn't even possible. There's another one coming over right now, in fact, which is weird.
Well, it makes it's not a huge surprise technologically that caller IDs are passed along the phone lines.
On busy signals? I've never heard of that. That's weird.
Yeah, we wouldn't know that there was another call coming in were it not for the fact that there is a screen to monitor with this system.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Hey, Bobson, were there any other highlights from 2020, if you could have any? Or are there, to put it a better way, are there things you're looking forward to in the coming year, new year?
Well, what I'm looking forward to is the WHO press release saying that the pandemic is over. That's one thing I cannot wait for.
I would like to see a press release that says that. And yeah, everybody go out and hug each other and do all kinds of fun things and lick the subway railings and whatever. Just for one day at least.
Well, I could have it. I could use it. Happening in 2021, that press release from the WHO, because, you know, it would be a welcome change, I guess, with the way things are right now.
That's true.
I think we got a preview of that. The daily election results were
made official.
Yeah, somewhat of a preview of that, and maybe on Inauguration Day we'll get another preview of that if we make it that far. I'm worried about what's going to happen on the 6th in D.C. with Trump and his ilk, but we'll have to.
Well, you're not the only one worried about it.
Well, you're in Sofia, Bulgaria. You're so far away. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, right. the 45th has nukes at his disposal. Still.
That's true. Does anybody realize Trump could launch nukes?
It's called ICBM.
Uh-huh.
It's not a good thing.
No, it's not. All right, Bob, so we're going to keep our fingers crossed and hope that 2021 is going to be a better year. But good hearing your voice, as always.
Have a wonderful evening, folks.
All right, you take care.
Good night, Bobson.
And that is Bobson from Bulgaria joining us on the telephone. And what do you think of what we just learned here? It's very weird. You get a busy signal. I just tried it on my cell phone. You get a busy signal when you call the phone. But caller ID still gets passed along on the TV set. Now I can tell you this is a cable phone. It's tied into the cable company. That's why it shows up on the TV set. So I think that's what happens.
We're not writing down numbers.
No, we're not writing down. The numbers do show up.
We won't say anything descriptive about any of these numbers.
You can block your number, and we won't see it. But as I also mentioned, your phone number is passed along in some sense because we had personalized ringing turned on a particular phone number. We blocked that phone number. We still got the personalized ring. So that means that information was passed along. Oh, I'm going to turn that down a little bit.
I didn't pick up.
I thought you picked up. Wow. Yeah, how am I supposed to know when you pick up if you don't tell me you picked up?
I got a lot of responsibilities here.
Yeah, pick up. When the phone rings, pick it up.
What was the number?
The number is 802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK. And we're not blaming Google for this. That's the Google number because we tested it on the actual number, and this is what happened. So it's something involving the cable company. That much I do know. I'm going to look into this a little bit more. Gosh, should we wait for one more phone call? This is the longest one we've done yet, I think. You guys look tired. I'm sitting there in the Coliseum.
We always look tired.
Uh-huh. Okay, there's the phone. You hit one, and we're going to pick up the phone now. Good evening.
One to take this call.
Wow, so that's Google telling us that. Hello, you're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yeah, hi. I have a trivia question. Did John Perry Barlow ever speak at Hope, and was he ever a guest on Off the Hook?
John Perry Barlow was, in fact, a guest on Off the Hook. In fact, actually, you know what? Maybe it wasn't Off the Hook. It might have been a different show I did on WBAI. If you look at the Off the Hook archives, though, you'll see, I think it was 1990, where he did a late night show, and I happen to know that he stayed on and was also a guest on the show that followed us, which happened to be a Grateful Dead show. And since he was a lyricist for the Grateful Dead, I don't know if a recording of that exists, but the recording on our end exists. He was not a speaker at Hope, though. I wish he had been.
Do you still have the tape? Do you still have the tape of the show of the interview that he did with your program?
Yes, that is online on 2600.com/offthehook, and just go to, I think it's 1990, It's one of those late night shows. It might have been called The Fifth Corner.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. That's great because he's one of my heroes.
He was an amazing person.
Yeah, he was. He once described New York as the capital of experiences, and I've been thinking about that a lot with the pandemic because unfortunately a lot of great stores and non-for-profit and cultural institutions have had to shut down,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the pandemic. And I hope that some of them can reopen when life returns to normal, if it ever does.
Yeah, no, it will, and I hope they do. And if they are around, we can still support them. If they're open, you know, if your favorite restaurant it doesn't let people go inside, you can still do takeout and support them that way. There are many places that we've been in touch with that are surviving because people care about them. Rob, go ahead.
I just took a look, and if you go to the Off the Hook Lark, if you go to the Off the Hook archive on 2600.com and look for the May 17th, 1990 episode. It's an edition of The Fifth Corner. Okay. And the guests are John Perry Barlow and Steve Jackson as well.
How about that? That was right before the EFF was founded, because the Steve Jackson Games raid was one of the things that inspired the Electronic Frontier Foundation to be formed.
Oh, wow.
It's a three-part episode. A lot going on.
I'm really glad that you got to speak to him, because he was a fascinating guy.
He really was. He was a lot of fun to hang out with, too. Yeah. All right. Thank you for that call.
You guys have a happy new year.
You too.
See you next year.
We will see you next year. 2 weeks on Off the Hook. All right. That's going to do it for us tonight. Any last words for 2020? And keep it clean, guys.
Good riddance. I'm going to kick you right in the zeros on the way out.
All right. Well said. All right. As always, it's been a blast. Look forward to seeing you all in person. And that day will come.
It will.
It will.
Next year in Leipzig.
Yeah. And we wish the happiest new year possible to all of you out there.
And now I will click end stream. And now I will click end to confirm.